Welcome to the Baseball America Podcast. Baseball America, bringing you baseball news you can't get anywhere else for more than 35 years. Now it's time to talk baseball.
Hey, welcome everyone to a Baseball America Podcast. I'm John Manuel. We're going roundtable style today. I'm joined by, let me see if I can do this right in alphabetical order. Ted Cahill, Carlos Collazo, Mike Ladana, and John Mayo. I am last in alphabetical order.
Yeah.
I don't think I went youngest to oldest there, though, but I definitely went oldest last. But we want to thank you for tuning into the Baseball America Podcast. Our podcast and our Facebook Lives are sponsored by Baseballism. Baseballism is the official off-the-field brand of baseball, offering apparel for men, women, and kids. Shop now at baseballism.com and enter the code BASHIP to receive free shipping on your order. That's BASHIP to receive free shipping on your order. Visit baseballism.com to shop for hats, shirts, and more today. You can't see I'm not wearing one of these hats that sits so awkwardly above J.J. Cooper's head. They just need to be broken in a little bit. But J.J. always rocks a hat when we're on Facebook Live and for me. Guys, we're going to talk Major League Draft. And we're not going to talk the 2017 draft. We're going to talk the 2018 draft. We've all been spending a lot of time in July and August seeing a lot of these players. Durham to have the USA Baseball Complex right nearby in Cary, Teddy U into the Cape, and then Carlos has been all over the map, both here, Tampa, area code games, Long Beach, San Diego. Mike went to area codes in San Diego with him, so we've all seen a lot of college players, and we've all seen a lot of high school players this summer. So we're going to try to give you a little bit of an overview of the 2018 draft class, but at this time last year, we gave you a pretty good idea of who was going to go toward the top of the 2017 draft. We knew Hunter Green, hardest thrower in the high school class, and that he was one of the top talents in the high school class. We knew that we had a podcast in the fall where Matt Blood of USA Baseball told you, and for him, Royce Lewis was the number one. We were all about Brendan McKay. We were just talking Teddy before the podcast today about the top three freshmen from 3 years ago. It was Brendan McKay, Alex Lang, and J.J. Schwartz, and you know, those three great freshman seasons that we had. McKay is the freshman of the year that year. McKay winds up being the first college player drafted in 2017. And we had him last year. I believe he was number two or number three on the USA national team prospect list. And it was as both a pitcher and a hitter. And right now he's pitching and hitting in pro ball. So a year out, we had a pretty good idea how the class was shaping up. But at the same time, we thought Alex Fado was a strong candidate to be the number one overall pick. He wound up going 18th. He sure pitched like a number one overall guy in Omaha, but that was after the draft. So Mackenzie Gore was not toward the top of the high school prospect list. And by the end of the year, he was number one on some boards. So there's some volatility every year in the draft class, guys. Accepting that, presenting that going in, let's get a quick overview of the class. I'm going to start with you, Carlos. And Mike, you can weigh in here on the high school class. This high school class, Carlos, this is your first time really like delving deep into it, going on the showcase circuit. But you had done this before as an intern with us a few years ago, Clint Longenecker as the Clintern. So you saw that 2015 draft class when you were interning that summer.
Yeah.
What was your impression and what were scouts' impression this summer of how the 2018 high school class is shaping up?
No, I think going into this summer circuit, the big thing was pitching. Everyone expected the 2018 high school pitching class to be extremely strong. And really deep, and I think that kind of bared itself out over all of these tournaments. Under Armour at Area Codes, East Coast
Pro, Under Armour, Chicago,
Perfect
yeah.
Game, yeah. All these events, pitching was really the takeaway strength. I think another thing that I've touched on a lot, both on Twitter and in some of the reports I've done, is the strength of the Georgia class. So those are the two demographics that we're going to be watching. I mean, Georgia historically, at least on the high school side, seems to be the best year that I know of personally, and I know a lot of scouts say it's the best year they've ever seen.
Yeah, 2002, when you go back, like in my time at BA, is like was seen at the time,
yeah.
And it's seen since then. It's like this very strong year, and that was a year for Georgia that had Jeff Francoeur, it had Brian McCann in the second round, Jeremy Hermita, there are a few other guys.
Yeah, it's just so deep this year, and
then
even I think three of the top five players that we had in our initial 2018 watch list, on the high school side at least, are from the state of Georgia. You've got Ethan Hankins and Kumar Rocker, who are two of the top pitchers, and they're going to be kind of, I think we've already talked about before, the Riley Pint, Jason Groom kind of argument going forward. I know at East Coast Pro, I was listening to scouts kind of bounce them back and forth off each other, debate the pros and cons of each pitcher, and try to figure out who's going to be the guy. I think for me, Ethan Hankins has kind of taken that step forward. At East Coast Pro, he had the best outing of any pitcher of the 2018 high school class that pretty much any scout that I talked to has seen so far. Multiple scouts said he was as good or better than Hunter Green in that one outing.
Yeah.
Don't want to compare him to Hunter Green overall at this point because it's still pretty early, but he's an extremely projectable 6'6 righty. He's throwing 95, 96 and holding that velocity into starts. His breaking ball is coming along a little bit, and he commands the fastball, which is really the big thing right now.
I bet if his breaking ball was a little bit more advanced, I bet you'd hear a lot of comparisons of him to Adam Wainwright because that's the last great pitcher from the Georgia high school ranks. And I won't go too far on my Georgia tangent right now because everyone will hear about it. Even talking about it makes me sound more Southern all of a sudden.
No, and there are definitely arms this year. I know the track record of Georgia pitchers is a little shaky, but I think this year...
Shaky. I'm going to say it again. Shaky. Shaky track record.
This year there are a lot of guys to maybe try and cover up that history just from a talent perspective and even a depth perspective. We can get into some of these guys if you want. But
well, at the beginning of the summer, we went over with our top 10 high school for 28. We did early top 10s in July 13th. Obviously, Hudson Belinsky was a big part of that. And we want to also, as we're doing a draft podcast, say a tip of the hat and some kudos to Hudson for his work here in 2.5 years, being an integral part of our draft coverage. He was our national writer for the draft this year. And now he is hired by the Arizona Diamondbacks as an area scout for area to be named later scout with the Diamondbacks. But as we were putting these lists together, Bryce Terang was number one, and that's the safest, longest track record high school kid, left-handed hitting shortstop, with Ethan Hankins, Kumar Rocker, Will Banfield, Georgia. And then Luke Bartnicki at 6, Georgia again. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, it's a bad country band in my mind, but Florida-Georgia line is where all these scouts are going to live in 2018 because the rest of our high school class was basically all Florida. DeSadas, Slade Ciccone, Mason Denneberg, Carter Stewart. So it's 8 of the 10 were Florida-Georgia.
Yep.
I mean, Mike, you saw area codes. Mm-hmm. Which is based in California, and it feels like it's always a stronger California or West and Midwest representation. Obviously, Jerry Kelenic, the top Midwestern player.
Yeah.
But even there, didn't the Southeast players kind of stand out relative to their peers from the rest of the country?
Yeah, I thought so. I mean, for me, I thought the California teams, compared to the last 2 years I've been in area code, really weren't as strong or as deep. And, I mean, granted, the teams that they've had in the past, they had Mickey Moniak, Blake Rutherford, Hunter Green, all those guys on the same team. It's kind of hard to it's kind of hard to top that. But, you know, I think the Nationals team, which is a team that represents Georgia and Florida and the Southeast, that team was very good, I thought. And I thought the Northeast team showed really well, too, the Yankees area code team there. I thought they had several arms and guys who could really handle the bat and made hard contact. But, you know, for me... at area codes and really at PG as well, getting my first look at this class. You know, obviously Ethan Hankins and Kumar Rocker really stand out for their velocity and what they're able to do. But the guy who could be the Mackenzie Gore type player, I think, is Matthew Liberatore, a left-hander.
But he's not from North Carolina.
He's not from North Carolina.
Okay.
But in terms of just his profile, just a tall left-hander. He's got room to fill out. He's got command of three pitches, the curveball and changeup. You know, both show at least average, probably better, you know, if not, you know, plus potential with those. He's already 90-93, touching 94, and he's got room to fill out. And he knows what he's doing out there. He quick pitches guys. He plays around a little bit on the mound. He looked really good at PG. I know, and Carlos was the guy who turned me on to him. He said, hey, watch out for Matthew Liberatore, and he really jumped out to me.
Yeah,
so he's a guy I feel like we'll see him moving up our list going forward.
At Under Armour, he was the guy they put in the last inning in case they went to extra innings.
Gotcha.
Because the guys going obviously knew he was ready for it and up to do that. And I think he threw 3 innings. He threw the 9th, 10th, and 11th, I believe. It might have been just 2, but either way, he comes out there ready to attack hitters. He does not care who's in the box at all. He just does his thing and goes right after hitters, and it's been extremely effective right now. I think he's definitely a guy that's kind of shooting up currently, and he'll be a guy to watch to see if his stuff jumps up. His stuff is already really good, but
And he's from Arizona, yes, so he breaks Arizona, up yes. a little bit of the he breaks yeah. up a little bit of the sameness of the Georgia Florida thing.
Him and Gorman from Arizona, both yeah,
Nolan Gorman, third baseman, first baseman, who pretty much won all the home run derbies this summer.
I was gonna say he made Marlins Park look small. Yeah. I know that. I mean, just watching him. I mean, Jared Kelenic put on some impressive mm-hmm. power display there. There were, I mean, a lot of impressive hitters at this high school, the junior home run derby that I saw at the Futures game. But Gorman did it the easiest, and he's like you said, just watching him throughout the rest of the summer. What we've been writing about him, it's like, oh, Nolan Gorman, home run. Again, yeah. it's not just Derby. He does
yeah,
it in games.
It's not just the Derby. Yeah, he squared up 95 miles per hour yeah. from Mason Denenberg in the Perfect Game All-American Classic and took it out, like, no doubt shot to right center field. So he can do it in game. He can do it in the home run Derby. And
so there are prospects. There are prospects from other parts of the country. But, Teddy, I have a feeling the Sunshine State, we're going to hear about this a lot on the college side, too. Because I look at the college list that we did in July, and it's not going to be too much. It'll be some changes after reporting on the Cape and these players, what they did in the Cape, what they did with USA Baseball. But Brady Singer's still Brady Singer. Didn't play this summer. He's the number one guy. That's as it should be. He was an unsigned second rounder and pitched extremely well in the College World Series and the whole season, really, for Florida. But you have Singer and Coar for the Gators, Jackson Coar. You got Shane McClanahan for South Florida. You got Gilbert at Stetson. This is Florida is going to be one of the strongest states on the college side as well.
It will be. I mean, it's often like that, and it definitely will be again this year. What happens in Gainesville is a huge part of that, and Brady Singer and Jackson Coar sat out the summer after the long journey through Omaha. They threw a lot of innings to help them win that national title, and they sat. Shane McClanahan sat. He had Tommy John a year ago, so this was his first year back, and so he sat the summer. But those guys are going to be, three top-tier arms. Logan Gilbert, what he did both in the spring and then carrying that over to the Cape. He had a really strong Cape, and he looks like he can be the next Stetson pitcher to join the likes of DeGrom and Corey Kluber out of that pipeline.
Yeah.
So the arms down there are going to be really good. I think some Florida area scouts and cross checkers down there are going to have some difficulties picking where they go on some Friday nights. They're going to have to plan it out a little bit. I mean, the Gainesville and Stetson and South Florida. I think a lot of the way teams divide up Florida, the probably falls on one guy.
Yeah.
One area for many of those teams. So they're gonna be running around a little bit, but it's going to be great pitching down there. And there are some offensive players as well. John India, has been a very consistent performer, and South Florida has some exciting athletes as well. And so, Florida, as usual, shaping up to be a very important part of the draft class on the college side.
It is it's a fascinating college class to me, guys, just because of the way that the draft is these days, which is very few players don't sign. The pro teams, the money is so high. Reading chapters of Alan Simpson's draft book, and it's just so funny to read, like, in the 80s and 90s, signability, I think a difference of $5,000 is what Barry Bonds went to college over. Like, he was offered $61,000 and he wanted $66,000, not a dollar under $66,000, so he goes to college. Yeah. That doesn't happen anymore. Players sign out of high school. The top players almost all get scooped up out of high school. It doesn't mean that college baseball's bad, but especially among the position players, it's usually not – they're late bloomers who are pitchers, projection. I think if hitters hit and runners run, so most of the good position players who find their way to college baseball are at these extremes. They have some flaws. And I'm looking at our top college players. Nick Madrigal's 5'7", 161. He was a dude out of high school, Elk Grove High. Everybody knew him. But 5'7", 161 is 5'7", 161. Travis Swaggerty. He's a pretty talented player out of South Alabama, but everyone I've talked to, and I ranked them high on our USA Collegiate National Team Top 30 list, which we'll see next week on Monday. But there's some rawness to his game. There's no question about it. Jeremy Ironman, same thing. Baseball family, dad played pro ball, older brother played pro ball. Still some rawness to his game. And then you're looking at guys like Joey Bart, Seth Beer, Lucan Baker. Joey Bart has all the tools to be a top-flight catcher, but he had a pretty bad summer, both in the Cape and USA team, 0-7, didn't make the team. Seth Beer, Luke and Baker, all bat. These players are at the extremes, guys. And I don't know, Teddy, it is, that seems like it's more normal for college baseball, but this year is, it's an extreme to me when the top three, the three most famous players I could think of in college baseball, Beer, Baker, and Madrigal, those guys are really extreme profiles. And I mean extreme.
They are. It's difficult. And you know, I think we've seen some more normal profile players kind of break through this summer. Grayson Janista and Griffin Conine up on the Cape. You know, they're both pretty solid outfielders, left-handed bats. They're normally sized.
Right.
Janista, if anything, is a little big for a center fielder. But, you know, those guys have tools that I think people are going to be more accustomed to understanding how to manage, how to deal with.
Yeah.
Whereas when you're a scouting director looking at this and you're looking at Nick Madrigal and you're saying, I really like this, and then but you have to turn to your boss and say, yeah, we want to draft this 5-7 player with the top 10 pick. Like, I mean, it's going to take some doing to make that call. And someone probably will make that call, but that's going to not be for everyone. And it's not going to be for everyone to take a player like Luke and Baker, who is, if you're taking him as a hitter, and we have to presume that's the way it's going to be since he didn't pitch last year, you're taking this behemoth of a man who can only play first base and, you know, is a right-handed hitter. I mean, these are not your profiles that typically fit in the first round. So this year, it's going to take a little while for teams to shake this out, and I think this might be one of the years where not only do everyone's boards 50 through 100 look wildly different, but everyone's boards 1 through 15 might look wildly different.
I think so, and you know, we kind of go into this every year, like, are we ever going to have a high school right-hander drafted first overall? In the last two of the last four drafts, we've had a high school right-hander go second, Tyler Kolick, Hunter Green. Kolick is recovering from Tommy John surgery, and Green is DHing in the Pioneer League because he's a different cat. I mean, I don't know if we should even just call him just a high school right-hander because the hitting is a legit option. But, you know, Carlos, what's the, you know, who are the profile guys for going 1-1? We've talked about high school right-handers, mm-hmm. but, like, high school catching, very, very difficult demographic. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, I'm not sure if I'm going to, you know, I don't want to put that on Ricky Bobby and say that he could be Joe Mauer. You know, but there have been high school catchers who've gone number one. But Bryce Terang, that's what we had him number one. He is profiley, and he has a very lengthy track record. How has he performed this summer? Has he performed like a 1-1 guy, or is that a little too high of a does the performance this summer not quite match that lofty status?
Yeah, I would say that probably not. He's had a solid summer from my perspective. It hasn't been extremely loud, but he's done everything that you know he can do. He's hit the ball to the opposite field. He's fielded at shortstop and played well there. He's run well. Even he didn't have a great area codes. He had a couple balls that he hit hard back up the middle and a backside shot to the opposite field. But every at-bat from him that I've seen, and this is going back to Tournament of Stars, it seems like he's in control of the at-bats. He has a really good understanding of the strike zone. And he doesn't really have any problems just fouling off or battling with low to mid-90s fastballs from these guys. So he's never seemed overmatched to me, mm-hmm. and that's definitely a good thing. But Bryce is a guy who does everything so well that he kind of has his tools play up. He doesn't have any impact power. I think that's probably the big drawback to him at this point. But Bryce, from every guy I've talked about, is a guy who can play shortstop at the next level. Scouts feel very confident in that at this point. He's a left-handed hitter who probably has some of the best feel for hitting of anyone in the class, and he's a plus-plus runner, depending on who you talk to. So there are a lot of things to like there, and his floor is very high.
The descriptions of him, that, honestly, kind of sound like Mickey Moniak at shortstop.
Yeah, and one that I've got is Dansby Swanson as well. Obviously, he's a left-handed hitter, but just kind of with the makeup and the IQ that he goes about playing the game with, Dansby is one that I've heard, and Mickey, that one seems like it'd be pretty fair as well. But just talking to Bryce, if you get a chance to talk to him, just the way he goes about the game and the way he goes about hitting, it's very simple, but it's a very intelligent way of going about doing it. And he's not really fazed depending on what he did in previous at-bats. So,
and again, a dad who played pro ball, so he kind of grew up around the game and has some advanced savvy.
His dad is an instructor in Southern California and tries to teach kids how to hit, and he's been doing the same thing with Bryce since he could swing a baseball bat. And all of his sisters are extremely athletic. If you want to know more about Bryce, we've got a feature on him in the latest magazine that we did, and you can also find that online as well. So
I find Kumar Rocker to be the other just super fascinating guy in this high school class. Yeah. I mean, have the rest of us seen, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, he's listed 6'4", 260, and his dad played defensive tackle in the NFL. This is not a normal profile either. He is a mammoth human being. And yet, it sounds like he's got pretty good body control and athleticism. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, if you watch him come out, I mean, he's immediately obvious when he's walking from the bullpen to the mound. He's a big guy. He's definitely the most imposing pitcher that you'll see in the high school class. But like you said, he's very athletic for how big he is. He has pretty good body control for that size, which is rare for a high school player who's that big. You can trace that to his bloodlines as well. I know that's something a lot of scouts talk about, but the thing with Kumar is his secondary pitches are so advanced at this point. His slider is already potentially a plus pitch. He buries that pitch well. It has sharp late breaking action. At Tournament of Stars, he really had everything together. He had a changeup, a firm mid to upper 80s changeup to go along with a mid-90s fastball. I think the one thing with Kumar that scouts are looking for is for him to spot that fastball a bit more. The velocity is there, and it's easy velocity too. Scouts all say he's playing catch with the catcher when he's out there throwing mid-90s, touching 98. But if he can kind of locate that down in the zone a bit more and sharpen up that fastball command, he's right up there with Ethan Hankins. And I know some people prefer him to Ethan Hankins because of the secondary stuff. And even though he's not as wiry and thin as Hankins, he still has some projection because that fastball command can go a little bit. And
it's not physical projection, exactly. But it's projection on the stuff.
Exactly.
But it is, I mean, like the comparisons for him are guys like Jonathan Broxton or like Jerome Williams. I know one of the scouts I talked to this summer said, well, it's kind of that kind of body, but like a better version. But it's just hard to comp a 6'4", 260 guy. He's the one guy on the high school side who reminds me of the college side because he is off the charts in terms of his size and his comparables. I guess the other guy who fascinates me, and Mike, I'm not sure if you've seen him. Carlos, you weigh in, or I'm not sure if you've seen him, Teddy, or not, but Carter Stewart fascinates the hell out of me.
I've seen him.
Because Justin Perline, our intern, one of our interns this summer, who wrote this, it's a good story on our website. I would definitely go seek it out if you have draft 2018 interest. This guy's, the RPMs on his, the spin rate on his curveball would have been top 10 in the major leagues. I mean, it's like a Seth Lugo-ish curveball
spin rate. It wouldn't
even
been top 10 in the major leagues. It would have been, I think, higher.
One of them was number one, I think, but I think it's been surpassed since then. So he has this incredible spin rate on the breaking ball. He's 6'6", 195.
Yeah.
This guy sounds incredibly exciting to me, Mike.
I think he's someone to be excited about, and I think he's someone who could continue to rise up boards, especially you mentioned his dimensions there. I mean, he's a guy who's only going to get bigger and stronger. You watch him, he's already got fastball command. He's 90 to 92 for the most part, so there's room there to add a couple of ticks if he fills out physically. And then his breaking ball, the thing that I really like about it is it's a curveball. It has vertical movement, but it's harder than most curveballs you see at that level. And obviously the spin rate, you know, is higher than you see at any level for the most part. But
he throws it with power already.
Yeah, right? He throws it with power already at 78 to 79. And he commands it. It's really nasty. Seeing it in person, I can understand that. To me, you know, spin rate is always one of those things that's kind of hard to, you know, visualize, I think, or just to know, okay, what does this mean? What does the spin rate mean?
Yeah.
I can see what it means with him because this breaking ball is nasty.
It is the best breaking pitch in the class at this point. If we were doing best tools right now, Carter Stewart's curveball would be the best breaking pitch, and it's not really up for debate at this point.
Who was the best breaking ball in the Cape, Teddy? Because I know for USA team, Tim Cate was best breaking ball, and the scouts I've talked to said the UConn left-hander, if you were doing best tools, best breaking ball, Tim Cate for USA team might have that. At the same time, he's kind of Casimir-ish in his size. There could be durability questions. And when you really think about like 6 foot 185, he's listed 187. There are not a lot of guys that size who are starting pitchers in the major leagues anymore. So durability's going to be a question for Tim Cate. Who was that breaking ball guy in the Cape?
I think a lot of people would probably say Ryan Rolison at Ole Miss.
Draft eligible sophomore.
Yes, and it's a wipeout pitch. But if we're going to take it more broadly, include the guys that sat the summer, Brady Singer's slider.
Yep.
That's probably it on the college side. But I think Rolison probably be the guy on the Cape. Zach Hess was up there for a little bit as well, and he has a very, very good breaking ball, as we all saw in Omaha.
So this is a little tangenty, but I kind of wanted to get to a bigger picture story, too. So we're talking about best breaking balls. I mean, fastball, velocity, that's what a lot of summer showcases are about. That's what we write about so often. That's where the game is going. Have you guys noticed, maybe this is more of an old guy question, I haven't noticed a ton of it, but I guess when I talk to scouts sometimes about these amateur players, and just say Connor Pilkington, the guy for USA, it's like, well, it was 91-90, or Casey Mize. Casey Mize is the top-ranked, will be the top-ranked pitcher on the USA college national team. He was a third-team All-American last year. He's at Auburn. He's an SEC ace. He checks a lot of boxes to be a first-round pick and a top-of-the-first-round guy next year. The one he doesn't check is health. But he, you know, he touches a lot of 96s. I got TrackMan data of him up to 95-96 for the college national team over at the USA complex. But at the same time, he's a lot of twos and threes. That used to be above average or plus for fastball velocity, but it's average now for the major leagues. Have you guys noticed that? Like this, as you're going around this, as you're seeing stuff this summer and you're covering it this summer, Teddy, I'll start with you. When you're making calls on the Cape, do you notice like 92, 93 almost being dismissed as average, or does that still move the needle for scouts?
You know, this is basically a Baseball America office discussion taken to the podcast now.
Yes. And
I have long been resistant to the idea that that's really changed. When we're talking about relievers, absolutely no one is going to get excited about you throwing 92. But if you're a starter and you're holding 92, go look in the big leagues. Corey Kluber does that.
Right.
Like, you don't have to throw 97 as a starter in the big leagues, and most of them don't. You know, they will touch it or whatever. So, yes, I think guys that are holding that kind of velocity, that is still going to be taken in high regard. And, you know, I think what we've seen from Mize in the spring, you know, the injury issues, I think, are contributing to where his velo was this summer. There is something to, like, I would guess that, so Chris Bubich, huge lefty from Stanford, he gets up to 93. He touched 93 in the All-Star game. It was a one-inning appearance, obviously, but he's done that before. He typically, though, throws 88 to 90 in there, and that's not going to excite anyone.
Right.
Whereas, like, in the past, if you have, like, a lefty, I think he's 6'3", 6'4", touching 93, like, people would have gone absolutely nuts over that.
Yeah, Stephen Gingrey, for example.
Yes. Instead, he winds up as, you know, the third or fourth best pitching prospect on the Cape. I think I ranked him fourth best pitching prospect on the Cape, and he carves and everything, but... So there is something to this, but I don't think 92 to 93 is going to be dismissed if you can actually hold that and do that for 5-6 innings. On the high school side, maybe that is being dismissed, because if you're only doing that for 2 innings, mm-hmm. there become larger questions about what you do once you get off the showcase circuit.
Yeah, I mean, is the velocity on the high school side surprising at all, Carlos? Is it what you expect? I mean, and Mike, I mean, you've been to a few of these now, three area codes in Jupiter. You know, were scouts even surprised, and how are they viewing velocity on the high school circuit?
I don't know if they were surprised at some of the peaks these guys were getting to, but I was definitely surprised at how many guys were throwing in the low to mid 90s. I mean, every single pitcher at the Perfect Game Classic threw at least 91, which was surprising to me. I don't know if scouts who have been around longer are surprised by that or not, but what also surprised me was the number of guys who were pitching and locating and switching sides with mid-90s fastballs, because I would assume high school kids throwing 95 are just slinging it in there, but we already touched on Hankins. Mason Denenberg throws 95, 96, and he's
not even full-time pitching,
yeah.
and he's not even 100% full-time
inside,
baseball.
Inside, outside, pretty regularly from what I've seen from him. Cole Wilcox is another guy who throws mid-90s, another Georgia guy, and he seems to have a pretty good idea where it's going.
Georgia pitching.
Yeah, it's insane. So I guess the depth of guys who are throwing in the 90s and locating it at this point is surprising to me, and just the depth of pitchers this year I was impressed with.
I mean, Mike, are you becoming inured to it? Like I said, I mean, you've been to this over and over again now. We send you to Jupiter, we send you to PG, we send you to area codes.
Yeah.
Are you kind of getting used to it down at the high school side?
Yeah, you know, I mean, at Area Codes, it was about the same as I've seen it the past couple of years. I mean, you have a lot of guys running out there that are going to be, you know, 87, 88. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, you might see a guy come in and touch 93. And, you know, that's probably, you know, peak velocity for, you know, a lot of teams in that event. And then you have a guy like Ethan Hankins come in and touch 96, 97. But
doesn't he also have, like, the tucked-in thumb, Ethan Hankins, like, on his fastball grip? It's a little different grip, is it not? I thought I saw that story that...
I know Liberatore has a tucked-in finger on his curveball.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'll have to see.
I thought I saw Hankins had a different grip as well with the fastball, which just... I tried to throw one the other day where Cliff Welch, one of our photographers, sent me the picture of how his thumb is tucked in under the ball.
Yeah.
And I tried to throw a couple... I shouldn't even hold up my arm because it's very sore because I threw a lot of BP yesterday. But I tried to throw a couple, and those went behind the hitters. They didn't even... I'd only dosed two kids, which is an improvement for me. They didn't know what I meant by dose, and neither did any of the parents. But I did throw a couple balls behind them when I tried to tuck that finger underneath. I don't know how the heck Ethan Hankins does that, but it sounds like he has really good fastball command, too, for his age and the velocity that he throws with. So
He makes it look easy. He makes it look very effortless. It's easy velo. He's loose, and then the fact that he varies his delivery as much, which is one of those things that's in vogue right now, and you see it a lot. Marcus Stroman is doing it all the time.
Yeah,
Johnny Cueto's been doing it for years. You're seeing it kind of more and more, or at least highlighted more. People talk about it more, and it's something that he does, and I think it's fun. Just, you know, he'll hold his delivery a little bit longer, or he'll quick pitch, or he'll...
My favorite thing that Ethan does is, so when batters start to adjust to this, they'll kind of step out of the box and take their time. If a batter steps out of the box with Hankins on the mound, he'll turn around and he'll go mess with the rosin bag to where he's stepping on the mound right when the batter's ready to get set, and he can still quick pitch. So he's thinking about it constantly, and there's a lot of gamesmanship there, and it's fun to watch.
The part I like about that is that the mentality of the pitcher has the ball, the pitcher's in control.
Yeah.
You control the at-bat. So even if it's, like you say, like gamesmanship, the mentality that creates that is, who's in charge here?
100%.
Ethan Hankins is in charge, and that's the mentality I think a pitcher has to have.
The best description of this, or the best example of this, is when Bryce Durang faced Ethan Hankins the first time in Area Codes. That exact situation that I was talking about happened then. I know a couple people in the stands, scouts and evaluators, were kind of chuckling at the gamesmanship there, because both of those players are normally in control of the at-bats, and you can tell both of them are trying to do whatever they can to be in control of the at-bat. And just the way they think about kind of going about it is fascinating to me and exciting.
Teddy, what was the velo like this year at the Cape All-Star Game? Was it, even this is the third year, I think we sent you the Cape All-Star Game in a row. Was it different? Was it similar to past years, a little better?
I think in general people were impressed by the velocity on the Cape. I think there were a lot of relievers, especially, that were just rolling out there in the upper 90s. You know, Ryan Feltner, who had a very bad sprint for Ohio State. His ERA this sprint was like 6.5, but he was rolling out like 96, 97. He had a very nice summer on the Cape, and you know, definitely helped himself. But I think you know, in those one inning stints there were a lot of guys throwing reasonably hard. I didn't find it to be wildly overwhelming, but I think just in general the velocity on the Cape was up this year.
And the thing is, with the national team, it was down.
So, and I think that plays into it, is that last year the national team got the hard throwers. They took Bukauskas, they took Lane, they got Fajardo, they got those guys. This year they didn't take guys that were just throwing hard, and so the Cape wound up with more guys like that.
I think that's probably a reflection of the coaching staff. John Savage, pitching coach Troy Buckley, these are guys who are certainly familiar
strike
with hard throwers.
Strike throwing was a priority, I think, for that staff when they were picking it.
Right.
More than it typically is.
So that's how you wind up. And I'm not saying that he's not a good prospect, because he's actually one of my favorite guys in the class. I love Tyler Holton. Plus hair, plus athleticism, can swing the bat, good quote, good changeup, like plus changeup. Breaking balls improved. Sounds like it's a solid average curveball now. He just doesn't have arm speed. He's 84, 88, touching a 90. I had a scout tell me that one of the times he saw him, it was one inning of 84, 88, and then three innings of 82, 86. That's a 20 fastball in the big leagues right now. That's Jamie Moyer, you know, from 15 years ago. But Tyler Holton gave up one earned run the whole summer in 13 innings, 14-2 strikeout to walk, and he is athletic. This is a guy, like, if he were in pro ball right now, trying to survive a Sally League season where he was throwing 82, 86, he would be given a weighted ball program. I mean, that's what he'd be given. there are ways, if all you want to do is throw hard, if you want to add 5 miles an hour velocity, we can figure that out. You know, there are a million self-help books for it. I just read one. I was reading Dave Coggins' book just now with David Yeager and Trevor Hoffman. I've got the Jaeger book at home. If you want to throw hard, you can go to Texas Baseball Ranch on the web, who are advertising throw harder. It's very rare that you see someone advertising throw better changeups.
Yeah.
Have more pitchability. It's like the bats were before they started really coming down the bats. And every bat ad that we've ever run at Baseball America remains hit harder, better performance. They never say, here's the most durable bat on the market. They don't say that. And no one says that for pitching. It's all velocity, velocity, velocity. So if Tyler Holden wants to throw harder, I think he'll throw harder. So I like him as a prospect because I think he will throw harder. Mm-hmm. He's an athlete. He'll stop hitting, which I know he'll hate. He'll focus more on his velocity than he will on his hair. I'm just making jokes, but the guy has good hair. This is not subjective. This is an objectively good hair.
It's not even the best hair on the team.
Drew Mendoza, yeah. Definitely. I know they have a hair rivalry.
Drew Mendoza's hair is like as good as his power.
Yeah, you know, and he doesn't use products.
It's elite hair.
Yeah, so
it's elite hair. Yeah, so I think Tyler Holden, for me, I think he's going to be a big leaguer, but he's not going to be a big leaguer throwing 84, 88.
Well, I also think that the Florida State is an interesting example here because Team USA took Holden, who was exceptional this year, an All-American.
Love that
guy. Deserving of his spot on Team USA. The Cape gets Cole Sands, who throws way harder than Tyler Holden. He's also right-handed. But, like, so that it's just interesting that just on that one team, just the division, like, the Cape got the
harder
superior
thrower.
Prospect, probably, and Team USA got the superior college player.
The superior pitcher.
And Team USA went 15-5. Can't argue with those results. But, again, it just meant that some of these guys that maybe would have been on Team USA in years past went to the Cape, and therefore there was a little more stuff on the Cape.
It was a little jarring, though, to watch the college national team having, again, to remind you how old I am, watched them since Jared Weaver threw hard. It was on the college national team back when Justin Verlander was young and fighting in the dugout with Dustin Pedroia. But the top pitchers on this staff, the hard throwers were Dallas Wolfork, another Ole Miss, who was at the 97 out of the bullpen. One scout said the first thing he noticed about Dallas Wolfork was his thighs.
He's a big boy.
He's a big fella.
Austin Riley's high school teammate.
I didn't know that. That's interesting. So we saw him probably at DeSoto. All right, in the NHSI. Then you have Nick Springles at the 95 from the left side, but kind of scatter command. Riley Gilliam's 5'10". Maybe he's Dominic Leone, to use a Clemson-on-Clemson right-handed pitcher, undersized comp. But most of these guys weren't throwing hard. Like Sean Weimer, touching some fours. But the pitchers who got the most innings were Connor Pilkington, who can touch a five, but really pitched at 90, 92. Mm-hmm. Steven Gingery, who's 88, 91. Above average fastball life, but not velocity. Again, Holton. And then Patrick Raby led the team in innings pitched, 19 and a third. No earned runs allowed. Wow. And I can't find a guy to say a nice thing about his stuff and his pro prospects. Good college pitcher, Vanderbilt Friday guy, but 88 to 90. And the last two guys I just talked about, where I was really bearing down on Patrick Raby, my question was, what does Patrick Raby do well enough to allow him to have this dominant summer? They both were like, well, he makes good pitches. He's a pitch maker, but I wouldn't put average on anything he does.
Yeah.
So it was a different college class. We got a couple questions, and then I got to bail, so you guys can finish the podcast. Let's take a couple Twitter questions, though. David Sanchez asks, the lefty that started opposite Hankins in the perfect game, first rounder, Carlos Collazo.
Yeah.
Who was it, and is he a first rounder?
That's Matthew Liberatore, who we touched on already. I think at this point, if you had to guess, probably yeah. I mean, it's really early to kind of put that on somebody, but he's a 6'4 lefty who's throwing 92, 93, like Mike said, with feel for three pitches.
Are he and Luke Bartnicki the top high school left-handers in the
class? Yeah, I think so. I think if you ask me right now, I'd say Liberatore has looked much better than Luke Bartnicki. His slider has been inconsistent. I know that's a developing pitch for him. He can go back and forth with the fastball either side, but I'd say Liberatore has pitched better this summer.
How's the high school left-hander depth look?
Not as good as the right-handers, which is probably not surprising, but there are some really interesting lefties. I mean, those two are the first that kind of come to mind. Caleb Hill is a guy who showed well at East Coast Pro. he's another guy to look into.
And we'll see how many of these guys also. Mm-hmm. This is a big weekend coming up as we're podcasting. Tomorrow is the start of 18U National mm-hmm. Team Trials. So they have Tournament of Stars. I think it was, 96 players this year. That whittles down to a 40-man roster, which was announced the All-Star Weekend. That 40-man roster now under the command of Matt Blood, Baseball America alum and USA Baseball 18U National Team Director. They're all in Minnesota, going through physical today, checking in. Trials start tomorrow. They're going to be training at the University of Minnesota's ballpark and at Target Field. Mm-hmm. Apparently, I got Verklempt talking about it. But so we'll see how that team that goes to Thunder Bay September 1st for 18U World Championships.
Another lefty who I should have mentioned is Ryan Weathers, who has looked extremely good at East.
Son of
Pro
David Weathers, right?
Yes. He might be the most polished lefty right now, just with fastball command, changeup, slider, harder breaking ball. I don't know if he calls it a slider or curveball, but Ryan Weathers is also a guy to watch out for.
The left-handed commit.
Yep. There's another Vanderbilt commit, but the left-handers, Teddy, we talked about this. This is one of the areas of strength of the college class. Potentially, you have Gingery and Holton, who are both first-team All-Americans, coming back. We mentioned, and then Pilkington, who was number 14 in the Cape prospect list last year as an 18-year-old freshman, now is a 19-year-old sophomore, one of the top 10 guys on the college national team list. And we mentioned Shane McClanahan, the most exciting of these guys. He has had Tommy John surgery, but McClanahan's 6'1", 173, but a ball of athleticism. And you wrote about him a couple years ago when Mark Kingston recruited him to South Florida, this very exciting draft recruiting class. Coach Kingston's gone to South Carolina, but he leaves behind some real talent at South Florida.
Absolutely, and you know, McClanahan has you know, he missed his freshman year, that first year with Tommy John, but he came back and was dynamite this year, and certainly looked like every bit of the projection is coming together for him. And then we mentioned Ryan Rollison earlier, again another draft eligible sophomore.
Yep, another left-hander.
You know, he was the top arm on the Cape. There is some definitely left-handed. Chris Bubich, also left-handed. There's definitely some good left-handed pitching talent out there this year.
Yeah, and I think, again, on the USA team, we mentioned some of those guys. Springle's another really interesting guy to watch. Very different delivery right now than he had in high school. The arm slot's lower. The arm action is longer. He is trying to manufacture fastball life. He has done that, but he has sacrificed command to get fastball life. This is probably a whole other podcast, but this is part of, as Matt Eddy talks about, this convergence that we see in professional baseball of relievers are becoming more like starters and starters are becoming more like relievers. I mean, less is being asked of starters and more is being asked of relievers. I think that's going to start filtering into draft discussions. What makes a starter pitcher, what makes a high school, an amateur pitcher project as a starter? I think that line's getting blurred. We had another question. Maybe this would be a good way to wrap up the podcast unless you guys have other items you want to bring up. Chuck Wurtenberger asked, who's the best high school draft prospect as it stands today? Can that player go number one overall and make it 3 years in a row of high school players going number one? And I guess the flip side is, who are the college players most likely to go number one overall? Carlos, we've talked about Hankins, we've talked about Rocker, we've talked about Terang. Is there someone else you could see going first overall?
I think another interesting one is Nander DeSantis. He's a shortstop out of Florida, a really talented Florida shortstop class. He's a switch hitter. He's only been hitting from the left side for about 2 years now, but he has power from both sides. He did the home run derby at the Under Armour game, and I think had 11 homers in the first round from the right side.
Wow.
At Wrigley Field. It was the most impressive first round. I think it was the best round overall. He didn't win, but it was the most impressive individual round. And then he switched over to the left side at San Diego's field for the qualifier for Perfect Games Home Run Derby.
And at Fowler Park.
Yeah, and he had one of the most impressive home run rounds from the left side as well. He's bigger than Bryce Durang, and he has more impact with the ball because of that, but he also has really quick actions at shortstop, really impressive hands, and he's got a great approach at the plate as well. So he's maybe more toolsy. I think he's probably definitely more toolsy than Bryce Durang. There's less track record there with the bat, but he is very exciting and definitely a guy who could shoot up depending on his performance.
How about Will Banfield and Jared Kelenic? Yeah. If you can talk a little bit about Banfield. I mean, Mike, you did a feature on Kelenic. High school outfielders seem like it's a hard profile to get to 1-1, but we just had it happen 2 years ago with Moniak. But what, you know, high school catcher, very risky demographic, mm-hmm. but Guy Will Benfield has track record for a high school player, unlike most high school
definitely.
Players.
Definitely, and I think the catching demographic in Banfield will be an interesting discussion as we continue to go through this process to see how many teams are scared off just by that history. But Banfield is one of the best high school catching prospects that we've seen in some time, according to guys that I've talked to. He is an elite defensive catcher already. He's got one of the best arms in the class, and he's probably the best pitch framer as well. I know you talked about Justin Perline a little bit earlier. Me and him did a catch framing analysis of the Tournament of Stars catchers, and Banfield rated very highly or at the top of that analysis that we did. He has the benefit of catching Ethan Hankins and Kumar Rocker on his summer ball team. He's extremely
aptly named team elite.
Yes,
this summer.
Yes, it is impressive. If you watch him behind the plate, it's crazy how low he's able to set up to the ground and frame low fastballs that have life that normal catchers are just trying to catch. But he frames those pitches. He blocks extremely well. He's got great bat speed. His batting practices are all really impressive. I think you're going to want to see him perform more in games. He's swung and missed a little bit much, a little bit more than you'd like to see, I guess, the past few events I've been to. But the bat speed is there. He's got power. So he's definitely a top-of-the-class type guy.
Is Kelenic that kind of guy for you, Mike? Does he have a chance to be a top-of-the-class performer?
I think so. I mean, you look at the guy, and he's a physical specimen. He works out alongside J.J. Watt back home from the same hometown as J.J. Watt, the Houston Texans defensive end, who's a big guy in his own right.
Yes.
Jared is not that big, but he's very strong, and he's a guy who, he's not a one-trick pony. I mean, you watch him, he's got some speed. He showcased that in the perfect game, All-America Classic. He stole a base in that game. He made a nice sliding catch in right field.
Yeah, it was probably one of the best defensive plays of the game.
Yeah, he's a potential five-tool kind of guy, and you watch him take BP. You know, the ball just a different sound coming off his bat. He's mm-hmm. got bat speed. He's got some, you know, he's got some pop, clearly.
Right.
You know, it'll be interesting to see how much he hits for contact, but certainly the thumping is his bat mixed with his athleticism, his strength, and then just the makeup, his work ethic. He's kind of an intense dude.
He's very intense.
He's very intense, but he works hard. He's a competitor. He's a fiery competitor. He kind of reminds me of this could be a good comp or a bad comp, but in terms of personality, Alex Bregman, in terms of his competitiveness.
He's not going to frag anybody on Twitter, is he?
He needs to be careful not to slide into people's DMs.
Yes. But I love Alex Bregman, but
I love Alex Bregman too. But he needs to be careful about that. But in terms of his competitiveness and that edge he has, he reminds me of Bregman from a personality standpoint.
I think the one thing to watch with Kelenic moving forward, that probably the biggest question for him in the draft is whether teams believe he can stick in center. I've seen him play really well there. I think he takes great routes and has great jumps on the ball, but a lot of people think he's a corner guy.
Right.
And if you do think he's a corner guy, he's got to do a lot more with the bat. So.
And it's going to be hard for a high school outfielder in Wisconsin to perform in the spring to move himself up versus...
After Jupiter, he's done, basically.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, just about. That your evaluation really will be based on that. Whereas, again, for Brady Singer, I mean, he's the obvious leader. Third straight year we've had a Florida Gator as that obvious leader. I think it's earned. We have, I guess, I wouldn't say dark horses, the guys who emerged the most in the Cape this summer as potential bats who could be drafted high, Teddy, were Griffin Conine and Grayson Janista. Grayson Janista was a guy who had not a great body out of high school in the Kansas City area, really has gotten better at Wichita State. Wichita State making this case in the Cape, I think they're going to be one of the most watched teams next year. And the same for Duke, where it wasn't just Griffin Conine, but Jimmy Herron, who had a really strong summer after being an eligible sophomore this year. Are those two bats who are the most consistent bats in the Cape from an impact and profile level? Like Janista, if he can play center field, which he did in the Cape, Conine, who has the power to be that profile corner guy, are those guys in your mind candidates for 1-1, or are they more candidates for the first 10 picks?
I see Janista as a 1-1 candidate if you can be convinced that he's a center fielder.
He's like he's in the Bradley Zimmer family of center fielders.
Yes,
right?
Like he's that kind of size. He maybe is like a tick slower, at least first step slower than Zimmer, which is not going to help him in terms of staying in center field, but he is that kind of physical player. he has power that he hasn't tapped into yet, in part because his swing, he's still swinging like he's a contact guy, and at some point somebody might be able to unlock some of that power with him. But I think he could be there. I think it's really hard to take a guy who's basically a right fielder or maybe a left fielder, depending on his athleticism. Konine is as 1-1. You'd have to hit a ton. And, I mean, he can hit, no doubt, but I think that's a hard profile to take at 1-1. I think Ryan Rolison maybe could jump him as a left-hander. If he goes out and performs on Fridays in the SEC as a left-hander, throwing the way he throws, like, I think that people are ready to more ready to take a guy like that than they would be to take a guy like Konine, who had an incredible summer and should be considered ahead of Rolison at this point. But I think that the ceiling on Rolison is better than what you're looking at Konine.
And that's a great call. And the one thing to remember when we're talking 1-1, and thanks everyone for the questions, but the Phillies right now have the worst record in the major leagues. That would be interesting if they picked first overall twice in 3 years. The Giants are next. The Giants are not an organization that generally takes high school players high, but they just took Helio Ramos in the first round this year. And then the Reds and the White Sox are in that mix. The White Sox actually, as of now, would pick third and the Reds fourth. Those are the four teams that have 70 or more losses in the major leagues right now. So for me, I mean, there's doesn't mean that some other team can't get tanktacular and catch them. Detroit, the Athletics, certainly those two teams. I mean, the Padres want the tank. They've got more Rule 5 picks than anybody. They could run them all out there every day, all day, and tank with the most. But the Giants and the Phillies and the White Sox, those three teams have the inside track, in my mind, to pick in first overall. And in general, the track record of the Giants and the White Sox has been very college-heavy.
We know that the Giants like the Cape a lot.
They do. John Barr is on USA Baseball. He's been on USA Baseball's board of directors for a long time, and he does love the Cape, whether it's Brandon Belt or Brandon Crawford or Joe Panik. Whoever.
I know so. Brian Sabian was on the Cape for a while this year.
There you go. He's hard to miss. He's got good hair. He doesn't have Drew Mendoza hair or maybe Tyler Holton hair. And he's a Bay Area guy. And he's from the Tampa Bay Area, which he insists is the best Bay Area. No offense to the Tampa Bay Area, but come on. How can you say that? I just don't get that one. So by offending the entire Tampa Bay Area, that's a great way to end the podcast. We're going to have a lot more draft coverage going on, but we have other things to do as well. So we appreciate the questions. You can always send those to us all on Twitter. We're not hard to find on Twitter, but Carlos Collazo, Ted Cahill, Mike Lann, appreciate you guys taking the time. I want to remind you that our podcast was sponsored by Baseballism. Don't forget to shop now at baseballism.com. Enter the offer code BASHIP and receive free shipping on your order. Visit baseballism.com for hats, shirts, and more today. And thank you to Baseballism for sponsoring our podcast. So for the draft crew here at Baseball America, I'm John Manuel. We'll see you on the next Baseball America podcast. So long, everybody.